What's up, everybody? Welcome to Send It, the official blockchain and cryptocurrency podcast from OKX Insights. I'm your host for today, Adam. I'm a senior editor here at OKX, and I'm joined, as always, by my fellow senior editor, Hunain Nasir. Hunain, how's it going today?
Good, thank you.
Good. And I'm also joined, as always, by the senior copy editor, Maxwell Koopsen. Max, how are you? How's Berlin?
Yeah, doing great. Berlin's great. A little rainy today, but, you know, not so bad.
Nice. And we've got two awesome guests I'm really stoked to have on the show today. We have Andy and DC Builder, two friends, you know, from crypto Twitter, from the crypto space. I'm going to let you guys introduce yourselves, talk about what you do and a little bit about who you are for our audience. So, Andy, why don't you go first? And then we'll go on to DC Builder.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm Andy. I currently work on Fractional Art, which is an NFT fractionalization platform. A bit about myself prior to that, I've been a Solidity dev for like 4 years and change now. Kind of got started doing that in like summer of 2017. Spent a lot of time at MakerDAO. And yeah, now I'm just a bit of an NFT degen and working on Fractional.
I am I'm a blockchain researcher at Morales.io. And I've been working there for like the past 2 years. And recently I'm trying to switch to like a blockchain developer role. And so, yeah, just hacking around on different projects, learning and writing stuff about the space.
Right on. Well, let's just like get right into it then. We wanted to have you guys on sort of broadly to talk about Web 3.0. Especially, you know, this is a really hot topic with Facebook companies rebranded Meta and all that. And they're super like acid trippy ads and all that stuff. And our last episode last week, yeah, we talked quite a bit about the metaverse, a lot of speculation and whatnot, but you know, we are not sort of like Solidity devs. We don't, you know, work directly in, you know, building Web 3.0, building the metaverse, this sort of stuff. So I'm curious, maybe sort of to start off, what are your guys' takes on, like, let's use Meta as an example of like a centralized metaverse, if you will, like Facebook's sort of metaverse platform that they're building that would almost certainly not be decentralized, right? What's your take on sort of a centralized versus decentralized metaverse that's, you know, taking shape sort of before our eyes?
Yeah, well, it's like, I feel like it's kind of hard because, like, honestly, what is the metaverse? Like, I don't think anyone can really give you a answer that is right. So it's like, honestly, a lot of it feels like just kind of my own speculation is what I feel like that's going to be like. But all that to say, like, I feel like kind of where we're going to see big differences is realistically, probably the Facebook metaverse is going to feel a lot more like a AAA video game style thing, and whatever decentralized metaverse is going to feel a lot more like Roblox or something like that. That's maybe not quite as polished, but has a lot more community buy-in and like more organic excitement and sentiment, like positive sentiment around it. I think that's really going to be the main difference is like, and I think this is kind of happening in Web3 in general, even looking at other chains and stuff, is that people are really excited to use things that they can own and like be a partial owner of. And so I think that large groups like Facebook and Epic and stuff who are building their own metaverses are going to have a really hard time getting that buy-in, where people are just going to be happy to move from one to the other, whichever is just like the one they enjoy the most. Whereas like if everyone is a partial owner of this metaverse and, you know, has that like monetary emotional buy-in outside of just like what looks nice, is like a pretty big difference.
Yeah, I agree with Andy's points. Like one of the biggest Web3 advantages is community ownership and like wealth redistribution of the, like, compared to like Meta. Whereas like most likely you won't be able to own your own assets within Meta, or we will have like a centralized custodial interface layer so that you can either like scale faster, have more adoption, because they have millions or billions of users. Like Meta, Facebook have more than like 3 billion users. So it's much easier for them to adopt this like metaverse-ish layer because they already have a social layer and a social graph that's established, and it's much easier to onboard them. So they, with the current technologies, they also aren't able to like use Ethereum like L2s current as they stand currently to scale. So I think like there was going to be a need for companies like Meta for onboarding and for like overall exposure to the space. And then it's up to us in Web3 to educate further and like help them make the transition to like self-custody slash like better ownership of their own assets instead of being in Meta.
So just to be clear, you don't think that that's like a integral part to the definition of a metaverse is like that control over your own assets? Is that something,
Well,
supplementary?
yeah, I'd say that it is integral for like people in general because we are used to owning things. We're overall like used to owning a house, a car, all bunch of things. And so if we transition to a more digital world, we're also wanting to own our own things and not be dependent on like a centralized issuer or custodian. So there will be like a driver for that, and it will depend on the profile of the people that are interacting with those things. But currently there's literally no technology in place to support billions of users in order to have self-custody, like with cryptography and private keys and all of that. So I think it is an integral part, like moving forward, like metaverse in like the next 5 to 10 years. But as it stands today, it's impossible to onboard billions of people onto Web3, like directly.
Yeah, and I'll agree with that, and also just say like, I do think that I don't explicitly like connect the metaverse and Web3 in my own like personal mental model for it. I think that Web3 makes a better metaverse, but like there's a world where it's just like everyone's playing old school RuneScape, and we've decided that this is what is like the metaverse, and everyone in the world plays it, and that's fine. And it's all centralized to a certain extent or whatever. And to me, like that could still end up being the metaverse, or like Facebook's could have a fully custodial, centralized thing that doesn't even use the blockchain, and it's just like Sims on steroids. And if everyone agrees that that's where people all spend their time in the virtual world, to me, that's still the metaverse. Just like Web3 makes it way better, and I'm pretty confident that Web3 is going to win out that fight because of that. Yeah, I don't think it has to be like this non-custodial, super crypto native thing.
Yeah, and do you guys think that we in the crypto space kind of overestimate the desire of people to have self-custody over things? I for one think that we do at times, but I'd love to know what you guys think.
I think so. I don't think my mom cares about self-custody of like her assets. I don't think that's like a real desire in her life.
Yeah, it depends on the person. I would say that things like social recovery are going to make this much more easier because like private key management is something that like 99% of the population will not do. It's just how I see things at this point. I've tried helping like normies onboard through private keys, but it's usually hard and they either forget or lose it or share their private keys with bots or whatnot. So I think like features like social recovery are going to make this like self-custody much easier. I don't know if you know like Argent, their wallet lets you like recover the wallet using like contacts and friends. That's sort of like how social recovery works. And so yeah, it's going to be like a hybrid of these two. But yeah, I see self-custody as a potential driver, but not necessarily for the biggest part of the population.
Yeah, and I think it's like it depends on what we're talking about self-custody over as well. So like in And it depends on the person as well, but I think with something like collectibles, right, digital collectibles, that sort of thing, I think there is probably more of a desire, right, to have self-custody over your collectibles. Just like somebody wants to own, a physical card, they don't want somebody else owning that, but saying like, no, it's actually yours, but it's in my house. Like, they want to have it, look at it, touch it, that sort of stuff. So I think we often look at like NBA Top Shots as sort of that middle ground, right? Of like, you own your NFTs for these moments, these NBA moments. You don't technically, because you can still be like censored off the platform as we've seen happen and stuff like that.
I think NBA Top Shots is a good example of like we've discussed before of that kind of middle ground, yeah, like where there is the centralized component and you know, a lot for compliance as well. But yeah, it is still, you know, it still is immutable. Like, you know, the blockchain is working, you know, for, you know, the benefits, and it's that trifecta, right? It just goes to, you know, the scalability and, you know, kind of lets the decentralized component of that, is sacrificed. And I wonder if other platforms, you know, if Facebook is looking at, I don't know what they renamed their coin initiative. But I wonder in which ways they might be looking at, you know, using a blockchain or crypto in a kind of centralized way and what that might look like in the metaverse. I don't know. What do you guys, maybe DC Builder, do you have any ideas on what that might look like if there was a Facebook coin?
Huh. I think they're named DM now. Are they? I think so. Yeah. So yeah, they had like legislative issues with issuing their own money. So they like the SEC pushed back on that as far as I'm aware. And so yeah, like if they use a blockchain, it's going to be interesting, like overall. I'm not like all that bullish on like other centralized L1s because it's just using a database with extra steps. It's not really like beneficent to them. Like the immutability factor is fine, but under something like Facebook where users are going to have problems and like maybe they send assets to their wrong transactions and you know that it's going to involve a lot of support and something that is immutable may not fit their like market profile. And so the users are probably going to want to have some form of like support where they can like roll back transactions or like do something on the way if like something goes wrong or like it's speculation at this point like what they might use. If they use something fully permissionless, like I don't know, like Immutable X that runs on Starkwares, StarkX, it's a Volition L2. And so yeah, that is fully permissionless, decentralized, settles on Ethereum. And so that will be it will be interesting to see like what they adopt now and what are their like steps moving forward, like where there's general direction like of infrastructure. But yeah, like currently I would use a centralized database for that. No need for immutability. Depends. It depends on their use case.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think that like if you're gonna do a centralized blockchain, the blockchain part is just because like you think that you can make more money than if you have it in a database or like it's some level of regulatory arbitrage or something. But I don't think that there's really like a actual value add there.
It's kind of branching off of that point because I agree with you. You know, you guys are, I think it's safe to say like, you know, Ethereum guys, right? Are there any other L1s that you can envision really sort of succeeding in the web 3.0 space? Because I mean, I think it's safe to say that Ethereum will continue to be the dominant L1 in the space. But do you think there's any chance that a competitor will, I mean, take a significant sort of chunk of market share or possibly surpass it or anything like that? I mean, what are your general thoughts, I guess, on like competitor L1s?
Yeah, I think my view here has definitely evolved over the last like year and a half as we've seen more usage on like Solana and even like different little things, like seeing the NFT exchanges on Tezos be really popular was like really, really surprising to me. And I didn't really know what to think about that. But like users really liked using it and they wanted to keep using it. And then seeing the amount of stuff that's going into like Avalanche and even like NBA Top Shot on Flow, like I at this point have become a relative like multi-chain guy in so much as like I still think Ethereum is going to maintain like the lion's share of most of that market share, but I think in the same way that you have like four different lending platforms on Ethereum that are all worth billions of dollars, you can have multiple different blockchains that people use just because of that same like community buy-in and what makes people excited. And I don't know, people are stubborn. If you just like decide that you like Solana a lot, like it's really hard to convince someone not to. They probably bought a bunch of Solana and then they're stubborn. They're like, nah, I'm a Solana guy. And like, how do you tell them not to do that? You need Solana to like fall apart at that point. And I don't think it's going to happen. And so then it's a challenging conversation.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, but I sort of diverge in some few points. I also like have been like my view on this has also evolved in the past few years. What I see with other L1s happening is that they've took like the approach that Ethereum has had a lot of state that needs to be maintained, and all of this state is very hard to migrate. We've seen this with the migration to ETH 2.0, where like the proof of stake consensus layer, like the merge from proof of work to proof of stake is sort of like a very hard endeavor to do, because you need to migrate the entire state, you need to migrate consensus and all of the parties involved. And so this is sort of like what other chains have exploited in their favor, where the other chains could run, could start afresh with other technologies. Mostly they use either like BFT consensus or like decentralized proof of stake. Distributed proof of stake, DPoS, chains like Tezos or Cosmos, I believe. Since they've they don't have like these dependencies from the past, like Ethereum started in 2015 and these other chains started like fairly recently, like 3 years ago or so, they do have an advantage that they could utilize different models, especially in the case, for example, of Solana. They run off this like proof of history and consensus, and they utilize an infrastructure that scales based off of the power that the nodes have, like connectivity plus RAM plus like various other resources. And so like their nodes are very beefy, and they're able to validate thousands and thousands of transactions per second without having like load. And they are fairly stable because like all of the nodes in the network are very powerful and have a very high connectivity and uptime. But these approaches have certain limitations in the fact that they still have to achieve consensus on the network on what is valid and what is not. And they need to achieve transaction finality. And these are very hard issues moving forward. Like they can scale only up to a certain point. Nodes are not like indefinitely scalable because technology is not indefinitely scalable. Like you have CPUs can only scale up to a certain point, and you have like the Moore's law, which says that you can approximately double the amount of transistors you can fit on a chip every 18 months or so, thus doubling like performance and overall like capacity and bandwidth. But this is starting to come to an end due to a bunch of like technical limitations where electrons start to do weird stuff in the processors. And yeah, like what I've adopted is like the Ethereum mindset, or like the modular blockchain mindset. I've talked about this in my recent article, where there's like this notion of modular versus monolithic blockchains. Monolithic blockchains are essentially what Solana, Avalanche, Phantom, all of these other ones that are using. It's just basically scaling the base layer indefinitely. Modular blockchains, what they do is they focus on consensus first, meaning that they want to prioritize for a decentralized and secure L1, and then use cryptography to scale further. So in Ethereum's case, we have so-called L2s, where you could have separate execution layers that use cryptography to scale Ethereum and settle on Ethereum, meaning that these L2s inherit the security of Ethereum L1 without having to like do consensus. And this approach, I believe, is much more scalable long term and will provide better user experience. So it has like a trade-off. Currently, it's much easier to use Solana because you don't have barely any fees, and the ecosystem is thriving. You have capital, you have investors, users. It's a big community. I also like use Solana fairly frequently, and long term, I'm more of an Ethereum person due to scalability reasons, security reasons, and decentralization as well.
So from a Web 3.0 perspective, we've also seen this new push towards anonymity, and everybody's kind of enjoying that on Twitter, for example. And I was just wondering, so when we discuss centralized companies like Facebook introducing Meta, and if we see these companies taking a dominant share in the metaverse, and On the other hand, we have Web 3.0 protocols. So do you guys think that anonymity is going to be threatened by these companies having dominance? Or do you think that anonymity is kind of like a trend that is going to persist as Web 3.0 and as the metaverse kind of grows?
So I'll go on the side of not being a non. It's hard to say. I doubt they're going to be super pro anonymity. Like, I don't think that Facebook's going to be going out of its way to help make sure that you can stay anon in Meta. But like, I don't think that Twitter right now is really also either like going out of its way to dox people who are anonymous on Twitter. And so I don't see why that would totally change unless they like started really banking people and doing all this stuff in the metaverse. And then at that point, I think that's more of like a US regulatory thing than it is a these companies thing. I don't think that Facebook, I think if it's up to Facebook, they want like legally to have as little like requirements of knowing about who you are like on that side. Whereas I think they want to know a ton about who you are and like what you do and what you're interested in and how they can sell things to you. But I don't think that like they explicitly need to know like your name and birthday to have that information and sell stuff to you. And so I'd imagine for a lot of people, like, or for a lot of companies, as far as regulation goes, they'd probably rather not know and just like sell you stuff without having to know all of that. But I could be very wrong there. That's just my kind of guess.
No, that actually makes sense. It's like they already know kind of the whole profile about you and you know, for their purposes. But yeah, the almost it's like too much knowledge is then where it becomes a problem. You know, if they know your name, they know your social security or your, you know, your birth date, your mother's maiden name, that, you know, might be required for financial activities, things like that. But yeah, they probably don't want to know that. And, you know, as much as they can, because they already have everything that they need without that.
Yeah. And then they have to secure that information from, you know, right, data breaches and whatnot, unless you're just Facebook, you know, and you just go ahead and sell it or whatever.
Yeah, maybe. But I think people would be even more, you know, apprehensive if Facebook started asking for a passport number or, you know, your social security number or something like that. Because yeah, there are these data breaches, and you know, when it happens with you know, what was the big one? Credit Karma or Credit Suisse had a big data breach, and I mean, it's like half of all Americans had their information essentially, you know, exposed. So I think that any of those potential areas for, you know, a major blowback, if something were to happen, I would just think that, yeah, Facebook would want to avoid that as much as they could, or, and not just Facebook, Twitter as well. And, you know, it just becomes more complicated.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to DC Builder's answer to this, because he is anonymous. Before that, I'll just add one more thing. If I remember correctly, at some point, Facebook did kind of mandate that users put up real pictures of themselves as opposed to fake pictures. Because I remember there being this wave of people getting banned and suspended because Facebook said your photos are not real. So your profile pictures have to be real pictures. I'm not sure if they still do that. I haven't used it in a few years. But I remember that that did happen. And I suspect that Meta will kind of perhaps continue that.
Well, I'm not really anonymous. I'm like pseudo-anonymous. There's like various people that know who I am, like they associate my like real identity to my DC Builder profile on Twitter and like all those various things. And so like it's more of a preferential thing. Like it's I like to see myself as DC Builder, as like this identity. It's like comes to personal preference, I think. Like I think like I have more to bring to the table when I'm like this, and I don't have this bias of like, oh, you look like this, you're like this, or this sort of thing. But yeah, in terms of like the Meta custodian, like of data and like, all of this, like gatekeeping KYC, I think it's up to the infrastructure that they use, because let's imagine that the metaverse or like the digital, communication layer becomes dominant over like, physical, communication, like in meeting in different people, meeting at different places. And so imagine that you as a as a general community, are gatekeeping a need to do KYC in order to talk to people. I think like that's sort of like a general human right that cannot be KYC'd, or like people should not have to be completely public when they want to communicate with other individuals or groups. And I think like there's a sort of like an ethical sort of philosophical play here, whereas like Facebook or Meta is not able to do, for example, they cannot censor you speaking about, let's say, I don't know, like NFTs or whatever, like or like the recent place that like the recent things that happened with Freeze, like Freeze like doxing with like different, like because they had some problems with copyright or whatnot. So like it's sort of like a thin layer which we have to balance, and I believe that decentralized companies should have at least or allow some form of anonymity, or like just have random assigned user IDs which identify a particular individual. As you said, you expose a lot of just by behavior instead of having like real name passport. So they could use like user IDs that have this user profiles, your the things that you do, or they collect some various information. Sort of how it works now. A lot of the information that you do is not associated with your profile per se, but it does associate with a user ID. And so, yeah, like just balancing sort of like all of these things. And if people really want to be anon, they just can evade these platforms. People already do this. Like people that want to be really anon, they don't use Twitter, they don't use Facebook, Instagram, any of these sort of platforms. So it'll be a balancing and providing products that fit for every kind of profile of security that the user requires.
Right. And that's very interesting, because you said that communication, when people want to communicate with each other, they shouldn't really have to be public figures. And I agree with that. But we had this discussion in the last podcast, raising that point that human communication kind of does need a representation of an individual. So I imagine personally that it would be difficult for anybody to have meaningful conversation without any sort of representation. So we can call that, let's say, an avatar. And by that means, I would imagine that the profile picture NFTs potentially have some kind of value in this regard. When it comes to first the expression of, you know, somebody's, let's say, avatar, and second being perhaps serving as an identity marker for somebody, just to prove that this person is who he says or she says they are.
Yeah, for sure. That's a very important aspect of the metaverse, as we call it, or like Web3, like digital identity is a thing. Like I see like dcbuilder.eth, like my ENS, as part of my identity. Like it's how I like approach to people online, or like how I present myself as. So yeah, for sure. Like NFTs, there are people that associate themselves with apes, with punks, with all various different sorts of NFTs and whatnot. So yeah, like this is a key aspect of Web3 and metaverse, that it's going to take on different ways. Like in the metaverse, like maybe they make 3D models out of our PFPs. Who knows? You know, it's like that's sort of like up to the individuals, like how they present themselves in this virtual spaces. But it allows for a much broader design space for who you are or how you want to present yourself, as whereas you're just a human and you cannot change a lot about how you look physically. You can just change a bunch of things over time, but it's very limited in that regard.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's cool around, like, I guess one of the challenges when you have a bunch of anonymous people is like, how do you figure out who is actually giving you valuable information, who you should be trusting? And it's similar in the real world, but at least, like, you know, in the real world, people do trust people, like when you see their face and stuff more. That's just like how things work. But like on crypto Twitter right now, basically there's two ways that you as an anon can, like, maybe it's three, but really two ways where you can like gain like that level of trust from the community. And one is by posting like continuously good, insightful stuff, or just like funny stuff, or by just like buy-in from one of these like NFT communities. And so you can basically like use like your time and your thoughts and like sharing knowledge as a way to signal that you are like an anonymous person who people should listen to, follow, you know, invite to their group chats, or you just be like, hey, look, I just spent $5 million on a Bored Ape. And so, like, obviously I have some level of buy-in into this thing because I've like committed my capital, and like, you should listen to what I have to say. And so I think that's really interesting. Like, PFPs kind of provide, to a certain extent, some other way to get community buy-in that like this Anon is worth listening to, as opposed to just like posting incredibly insightful stuff on Twitter or, like I said, really funny stuff.
Yeah, the only metaverse that I want to be a part of is one in which it's just a whole bunch of anime waifu avatars, and they all have like dude voices like my like myself. That's the metaverse I want to inhabit.
We definitely share the same vision, for sure. Yeah.
That's how you know when you can trust somebody.
Well, but it's also interesting, you know, because I think we're keep touching on this like definition of the metaverse, and you know, I think the your digital persona, your digital identity, is a fundamental part of that. Maybe even more so than the, you know, VR walk around in a, you know, Facebook land Farmville or something, which I mean, I think will be rolled out. I think there will be, you know, spaces, virtual spaces. But, you know, my question is, I mean, is the metaverse going to have a launch date, or are we already kind of there? I mean, is the metaverse already in this, you know, with your digital personas and, you know, what you take from one platform to another, you know, are we already in the metaverse?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think this kind of like goes back to what I was saying in the very beginning, where it's like, what is the metaverse? How do you actively describe what it is and what it means? Like, is it Ready Player One? Is that the metaverse? Like, are we not in the metaverse until then? And until then, we're just using the internet. My general feeling is that the metaverse is just the place online where people spend the most time and like feel at home. And like, what that really means outside of that, who knows? But so to me, like, Twitter is kind of the metaverse, and in so much as like, I've made a lot of friends on Twitter. I generally do a lot of my job through Twitter, a lot of random things like that. And so like, isn't a video game version of the metaverse just like going to be a skin over these things that we're already using that looks prettier and then is like easier to sell as a metaverse game? That's kind of how I've thought about it. So I'd say like, yeah, we kind of already are, but at the same time, like, hopefully it gets a lot better and more decentralized. But yeah.
Is the interloperability kind of a thing too, though, where like, you know, your digital identity on Twitter, you know, you can, whether it be a Web3 wallet or, you know, just maybe the profile picture or your name, but that is transferable to then like the Facebook Meta or, you know, Discord or Reddit or something like that. I mean, should there be an actual link between your profiles for it to be a metaverse, or is it then just, I mean, essentially then it's just, I don't get the meta part of the verse if it doesn't have some connectivity, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I guess in a perfect world.
Yeah, sure. I see this as a key part of like the meta part of the metaverse, or is sort of like a thing that I believe to be a core part of what's the future of the metaverse, meaning that there's like a decentralized social graph where you can have your own digital identity be part of, and you could use different aspects of your social graph and like move your, like, because let's say that you get censored on Twitter, like all of your personality gets essentially lost because all of your followers, your network, the ability for you to talk to them, like build your reputation back up from the ground zero is very hard when you get banned or restricted. And so in a perfect world, it would be like a decentralized social layer where you could like just have your interactions with other users be somewhat reflected on chain. And have that connected with other products or other social networks. But that's sort of like what I see, for example, Aave doing. They have like the decentralized social graph that they're building. And that's sort of like what I see sort of happening in the future, where you have your digital identity that is somehow structured and locked on chain, and then you have like this interoperable aspect where you could use the social graph as a backbone for interacting with other social layers that are built on top.
So then if Twitter decides to block you, you know, you don't lose everything. You still have that saved on chain and you can...
Mm-hmm. For sure.
That makes the meta part of the metaverse make a lot more sense to me, yeah.
Yeah, and I've thought about stuff like that too. Like, what if, you know, because I shit post and stuff. And it's like, what if one time, you know, I end up in Twitter jail or worse, like get banned? It's just like, I mean, I've put a lot of time into my Twitter, you know what I mean? It'd be like, it would suck to have that all wiped out. Like, I mean, that just happened to like 0x Bunny Girl or whatever, had like, I don't know, almost 10,000 followers or something. And I don't know what that account did exactly, but they got banned, you know? And it's just like you said, DC, but, you know, trying to start over, it's not that easy. Like, you can recoup some of your followers back just by being like, oh, follow my new account, I was banned, but it's not always that easy. So it would be nice to have that, you know, have that all tied.
Mm-hmm. And the record too. Not even just followers, but like, you know, mm-hmm. all of your posts and...
Yeah, it's content as well. Yeah, imagine mm-hmm. being a YouTuber. You're basically being at the mercy of Google at this point, where all your content, all your likes, all your interactions, your entire life's work of creation is being gatekeeped and held by the hands of Google. And if you just do like something wrong, you get a strike or two, and then you get like your account completely wiped off the internet, just like that. And I feel like that's sort of something that like companies should not have this power over people. That's a bit too much. And I don't want to live in a world in the future where all of this is just at somebody's whim of just like, so I decide to ban you because you violated some form of our policies or whatnot in terms of service.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's really interesting too, because maybe this is what they expected these platforms to be, but I definitely wasn't thinking about Twitter in 2009 when I signed up, or like when I was watching YouTube videos in middle school. I wasn't thinking about how it's going to be like one of the main ways that most or a lot of people are making a living and like building careers, and or like now people on TikTok are making tons of money. I feel like these systems were designed as like a fun social graph to like talk to your friends or like get the news or all these different things. And they've totally evolved based on just like how fast everything has gone digital in the world. And they're just like woefully unprepared for being like a major employer of a lot of people, in so much as like Google is kind of an employer of every YouTuber. But the people who are paying for it are the fans and everything. They're just like super, super not set up to be able to handle all of this.
Yeah. It's a point I made on the last podcast, but I think is, I want to get you guys' thoughts on it. In the way that companies and corporations and platforms like Facebook, Twitter, you know, TikTok, YouTube, they have terms and conditions. Like, it's very different. It's not a public space, right? In the same way that we, you know, in the U.S., just as an example, you have the Bill of Rights, certain freedoms, like rights that are, you know, guaranteed to you, not as a term or a condition, but like as a fundamental, right. Do you think that the lack of a kind of international, global, internet Bill of Rights, is that going to give, does that cede too much power to the corporations to define their terms and conditions in ways that we wouldn't accept from a, you know, in a free society, but yet we do sacrifice when we go on to our digital society. I guess I'm just curious about your thoughts on how that, that relationship and the power that corporations hold versus the power of the, you know, the users, how that might be in the future, maybe through Web 3.0 or a decentralized, environment, how that might give more power to the users.
Yeah, I think one of the things that like I've been thinking about recently, which is interesting, is just thinking about censorship resistance and stuff in social media. And like, maybe this is a hot take, but like, I think Twitter is explicitly better because it has censorship. I think that Twitter without censorship would suck. And like Reddit without censorship, it exists and no one uses those sites, but like very, very different groups of people than I want to like talk to you and spend time with. And so I think trying to figure out how you can like kind of separate, like as DC was talking about, like how you can separate like the content of like someone's online identity and then the curation of different people's content that they are producing. And like, it's totally cool to have a site where you have agreed that we're going to censor different people's content on here, but like everything that you have posted still exists on a blockchain in some like meta profile that you can then, you know, still bring back somewhere else. Or if someone really wants to go see what you had to say, you can, you still have like verifiable proof that it all exists. But like, probably whatever social media thing we're using or whatever metaverse thing we're using is to a certain extent going to have to censor people at like the super, super consumer facing level, or it's just going to be really, really hard to have it be a fun, good experience because some subset of people just really suck. And the, I feel like the people who really suck totally outweigh the like good times of hanging out with everyone else who doesn't suck.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good
point. Yeah, I definitely agree. And there's also like when you have censorship, you need to censor sort of like things that, for example, you know, like these topics that nobody wants to talk about, where you like people that are doing crimes or like film crimes or like whatnot. There's all sorts of different content that you do not want to have on a publicly available site, especially not a social site. And so, yeah, there's going to be this like fine balance between like, if you really want to have this associated with your digital identity, you can through this like decentralized social graph. But where you have like these, for example, let's say that we decide to create a decentralized social network. That network could be, for example, a decentralized autonomous organization, which would have a token and people are able to vote on the like what is censorship resistant content and what is censorship or what can be censored. Like you could vote on policies depending on the fact that you're a stakeholder in that network, right? If you are a participant of that network and you have like a stake in the success of the network, you should have like some form of having a say on what can be or appear in the network. It's sort of like fair distribution of content. And yeah, that's sort of how I see things going, where these, like, you have, for example, like legislative DAOs where they can like vote on different policies or like debate various different things. And so let's say that this social network could have a legal guild or like a legal aspect to it where there would be proposals, like a terms of service, if you will, but Web3 way, instead of having it in laws, which are very hard to enforce because it's global and it's the Web3. You know, you can be fully anonymous. Nobody needs to know who you are. How do you enforce these terms of service? You need some form of enforcement, and that I think would be either through coin governance or coin voiding or like different mechanisms in the future that will emerge in order to like sort of curate social networks so as to have less sucky people, as Andy said. Yeah.
Speaking of people having voting rights or having stakes in these ecosystems, I was also wondering, so Andy, you mentioned that you are involved in fractionalization of NFTs. What's the scope of that? And is there a potential for people to kind of be part of, let's say, DAOs on the basis of these fractionalized NFTs and have some kind of rights and all? I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah, it's fractional NFTs are really fun. It's interesting because, so I generally, like, if at all possible, want to have as little governance in anything that I build. And I think a lot of that is colored from spending a lot of time at Maker, and Maker has like a very intense governance system, and it's like a lot of work, but it kind of has to. That's just like kind of a part of how Maker needs to work. And there's interesting experiments to make it not be the case with like Rye and other things like that. But so kind of how like we think about fractional and what we really want it to be is something that like you theoretically aren't really governing this thing in so much as like you're not voting on proposals to use your NFT to do stuff or different things like that. You're kind of just like buying fractions of an NFT, which are also NFTs, and so they show up on OpenSea and in your wallets and everything. And then basically the only thing you do in governance is kind of decide how or when you would ever sell that NFT in the future. And so if enough people all agree on a price and what you should sell it for, it gets listed for auction. But otherwise, you basically all just kind of co-own something. We're trying to figure out for future, for like our next version of this, is there are definitely things people want to do with their NFTs, but basically how to do it in a way that's governance minimized, where maybe you want to play it with a parallel card, or maybe like one of the people who owns a fraction wants to use the parallel card, and so they can basically borrow the parallel card from the fractionalized, like the fractional vault, and use it for some period of time based on how many tokens they own, or different things like that. Almost like a timeshare to a certain extent. But a lot of different little things like that are kind of the next step of figuring out a lot of the fractionalization. Is there's so many interesting use cases and things you can do, but like the kind of easy, lazy version of that is just like, oh, let's just slap a time locked governance on top of it and let everyone vote on what to do. But then like it opens up so many, like so much more work for a user. Like I don't want to own a fraction of a CryptoPunk and have to be like monitoring the discourse forum for that CryptoPunk. That feels like a lot of work. And so trying to figure out ways where you can really, really minimize that, like the required end user input, while also maintaining something that's fully decentralized and safe for everyone to use. It's definitely a fun challenge. We've gotten a lot of input from people being like, oh, I really want to be able to like use Fractional to create, you know, a Pleaser DAO style thing with my friends. And my response to that to most people is, you have no idea how hard we work at Pleaser DAO. Like, you have no idea the amount of hours that we spend on Pleaser DAO. I'm not sure you want to do that with your friends right now. I saw it was someone from Galaxy tweeted something today about how a lot of these like groups of people who are putting together funds, this was specifically about the Constitution stuff. When people put together like funds to buy these things, they're not like actually fractionalizing them. They're just like making a governance token that kind of controls a thing. And like, there's no real, you don't actually own a piece of this thing. You own a piece of the governance that owns this thing. And there is a difference there. And like, you couldn't just withdraw your 2% that you own and hold it in your own wallet. And like, I don't know, it definitely is different. And so trying to figure out how we can like make owning fractions feel good and convince people that like, you probably don't want to have full governance over these things. Like, one of the hard things is people who are really excited about a lot of this stuff are really excited about governance and like really excited about DAOs, but like most people are not. Like, I think you'll have a very hard time convincing most normal users who want to buy an NFT that they should be incredibly active in a bunch of different DAOs. Cause like, one, you don't have time, and two, it's a lot, like it's just stressful. It's not super fun. It costs a lot of gas. But yeah, those are kind of like some of the stuff we've been thinking about with like the more DAO side of all of this.
It reminds me of, you know, because governance tokens and the discussion around the governance responsibilities has become a bit of a meme sort of recently. It reminds me of like DGen Spartan posted like one of those like deal memes. And it's like, you give your ultrasound money and you get governance responsibilities. But I agree with what you were saying about like governing, like really governing something in this space. It is a lot of work. It requires a lot of time, you know, with your online friends in Discord and gas fees and all that stuff. And I agree. I think a lot of people kind of underestimate how big of a deal like the governing responsibility really is.
Yeah. And most of these projects that are really, their decentralized governance is working well and it's going and they're doing things. They have a couple people who are either like paid to do it or are just incredibly committed and are really spending a lot of time. Like, think of guys like Monet Supply, who does stuff with a bunch of different groups, and there's a bunch of other people like him, but like, you can't just snap your fingers and have someone like that appear. There aren't that many people who are super excited about this stuff and really eager to spend their time and energy coordinating a bunch of random people online, because it's definitely a lot of work.
Yeah, well, fractionalization is a very interesting concept. I'm also like fairly interested in like all of these things because I have friends that are, for example, Zero X Jim. He's also part of Pleaser DAO. He's one of my best Twitter friends. We met IRL in Prague and Lisbon. Yeah, it's just a lot of people that are doing very interesting things through these projects. Also, one of my friends is part of the Constitution DAO, like trying to buy the copy of the Constitution. And yeah, like these concepts are very interesting because they allow for the formulation of a community around basically anything that you want to fractionalize or give like fractional ownership of. There's as Andy mentioned, there's a difference between the ownership of the fractionalized NFT and just like a governance token that is able to give rights to different people surrounding the governance of like ownership, for example, of the constitution or things like that. Yeah, like it's a very interesting concept to me. I'm not that familiar with many of the things that are actually going on currently. I'm part of PleaserDAO to a sense that I own DOC tokens, but moving forward, I think that there's many new unexplored ideas that are going to just like people that are interested or have some form of enthusiasm surrounding a topic are just going to come together, fractionalize a bunch of things, and build a community surrounding it. It's a cool part to share memes and share values together. Yeah.
Well, that's today's episode. I really want to thank Andy and DC Builder both for coming on. This was a great conversation, and we definitely got to have you guys both on again sometime soon. Until then, everyone watching at home or listening at home, you know the deal. Like, subscribe, hit the notification bell on YouTube if you're watching on YouTube so you never miss an episode. Share it with your friends, like it on, you know, your podcast service of choice. You know the deal, all that stuff. Thanks again for Andy, DC Builder, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye, thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.